this past week, I must admit I had several occasions to remind myself that I'm living in a silly, crazy, weird world. I just don't understand it. And one of the occasions in which I thought this was when I read in the National Post newspaper the following headlines. Cathedral in England opens indoor mini putt course. I thought to myself, what is going on? And so I read the article, and the Church of England officials at this Rochester Cathedral, which was founded in 604 AD, decided that they will install a 9-hole mini putt golf course in the very center of their cathedral. And the idea was to invite more visitors to come to church. Rachel Phillips, who is the canon for mission and growth at the cathedral, said the following. We hope that when people come in, they will know that they're welcome and they will have an enjoyable experience. So while people are here having fun and playing crazy golf, they will take the opportunity to reflect on the wider theme of building bridges, that they might find that they would like to pray, light a candle, maybe even talk to somebody. I thought, oh, woe is me. I have lived too long. Little did I realize how extreme this was going to get until I saw the Calgary Sun on Thursday. And on Thursday, they reported that a large British helter-skelter. Now, at first, that's a little strange for us because when we think helter-skelter, we might think of the book that was published about Charles Manson and the murders he committed years ago. But for the British, a helter-skelter is a tower with a slide wrapped around it. Okay, so the cathedral in Norwich decided that they would put a helter-skelter circus ride in the front of the church to give the people an opportunity to look at the architecture, but also enjoy the slide as they wound their way down the helter-skelter. And I thought to myself, well, woe is me. I am living in a land of fools. Now, I mentioned this at the last Mass, and I had to admit, some guy was listening. Because he came out to me after Mass, and he said, Bishop, he said, your homily inspired me. I said, did it? He said, yeah, I was just thinking, you know, with the contour of this church, the aisle slanting down, they would make a real good skateboard kind of park here in the cathedral. And I said, no way. Over my dead body, will that ever happen? What this suggests to me is that the Church of Christ is always in need of renewal. A renewal of faith, a renewal in spirit, a renewal in heart, and a renewal in truth. And of course, today is Faith Sunday. The readings all point in the direction of faith. The first reading from the Book of Wisdom describes how lucky the people are, the community that has the Word of God, the commandments, and the covenant. This is life-giving. The letter to the Hebrews, the second reading, talks about the history of faith and gives us some models of faith from our sacred history. The gospel reading is Jesus talking to his disciples and giving them some sense of direction, suggesting an approach to faith and what faith really entails. And so when we look at the words of Jesus, it strikes me that really there are three ways of summarizing what he has to say. He gives us a word of encouragement, first. Secondly, a caution. And thirdly, a challenge. Let's look at each individual. A word of encouragement. He says to us, do not be afraid, for your Father, in his good pleasure, is giving you the kingdom. Wow. Don't be afraid, for God the Father is pleasantly pleasured to give you the kingdom. When we talk about faith, we don't start with ourselves. We start with God, who revealed himself and shared with us his plan of salvation in his Son, Jesus Christ. And he invites us into relationship with him and with one another. Faith is, first of all, a personal response to God revealing himself. And living faith is how we live in relationship with him and with one another. And we have been given a conscience to guide us and to help us do what is good and to avoid evil. It's interesting that the first reading and the second reading remind us that we don't do this in isolation. We do this as part of a community. We don't start from scratch the day we're born, but we are born with treasures of wisdom. And our own personal response and our lives are but a little glimmer of everything that has happened in the cosmos and in history. We only live for a short time. We only can understand so much and get a little shed on light, but most of our lives are lived in darkness, and we would never survive without others. So faith is a personal response that is ours to God revealing himself, and it does entail personal responsibility, personal autonomy. Each one of us must decide what is good, what is right, and avoid evil. But this has nothing to do with self-sufficiency. Our sole obligation is to find out what's right. And part of finding out is what is right is listening to those who are more learned, those more experienced, those who are gifted, and enjoying the rich treasure that has been passed on to us. For us in the church, this is, of course, the grace of the sacraments, the teachings of the church, the good example of the saints, of our ancestors, our parents. And of course, when we're trying to figure out what is good, what is right, what do I have to do, we have to look at the object of our choice, we have to look at the motivation for choosing, and we have to look at the circumstances. And never, never are we permitted to make an evil choice in order to bring about some good. We must always choose the good. So the Lord gives us, first of all, a word of encouragement. He says, relax, don't be afraid. Your Father in heaven, in his good pleasure and regard for you, has given you the kingdom. And we're invited to respond. The second thing is, in addition to the encouragement, there's a caution. In the gospel, he says, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not let his house be broken into. He would not let his house be broken into. Think about, for example, our culture as a house. Okay, this is where we live. This is where we're comfortable. This culture, all the things that make up that culture. The last thing we should do is let a thief break into the culture. Each one of us to some degree has a little responsibility here, because our culture right now is one of moral relativism, one of self-sufficiency and individualism. And you have heard it said, as I have over and over again, well, that's your truth. This is my truth. This is my morality. This is yours. As if there is no objectivity out there. And when there's no objectivity out there, the culture has been broken into. And what happens to the social fabric? Those who are very powerful, and frequently those who are very unscrupulous, become our leaders. I'm not going to draw too many pictures here. I think you can work those out on your own. But if we're ever to move out of a hyper-tolerant swamp, what we need is community. And not every kind of community will do it for us, but we need an experience of transcendence. We need a shared practice. We need an alternate vision that will support and challenge us. And we need a means of communicating it. We need the church. They give us an experience of transcendence, of shared practice, an alternate vision that supports and challenges us, and the means to communicate it. The third challenge is to keep awake like good servants, to know what's going on around you, and to purify yourselves with the role of servant. Last week, we had Jesus tell us, look at your priorities. You're a servant. And as a servant of God and one another, what are your obligations? The challenge part that Jesus laid out for us is to be awake. We have to look at our priorities. So last week he got very dramatic and he said, sell your possessions, give alms, make purses for yourselves that will not wear out. Where your treasure is, he says today, there your heart will be also. Be dressed for action and have your lamps lit like those waiting for their master to return. One of the things that happens to us today in our culture is we have so many manufactured needs. We can always distinguish between a need and a want. But what has happened to us today is some of our wants have been artificially created and presented to us as needs. So last night I was watching the ball game, watching the Blue Jays. They're starting to show signs of promise. But then we broke for a commercial. And there's a poor guy sitting at his desk and he's got a long face on and he obviously doesn't like his job. The guy in the neighboring desk reaches over the partition and says, the mountains are calling. And all of a sudden the guy lights up, it's time for a Coors beer. This is happiness. Totally manufactured needs. God intended that our work should be enjoyable, that we should get something out of it. Participate in his creativity. And all of a sudden we think, Coors beer is the road to happiness. What we need is to separate artificial, manufactured wants and concentrate simply on needs. I want to share with you part of a letter that I received from a 36-year-old man. Here's what he wrote to me. I also found that I started wanting more and more things the older I got. I bought a new house, then a new car, then a new boat. But that didn't satisfy me. I wanted new furniture, a bigger car, and a bigger boat. I even took extra jobs to get more money. I seemed to need more and more money for the things I wanted. Then this past summer, I discovered that my wife had cancer, which could possibly have ended her life. I was shocked at what had been happening to us, especially to me. My world was upside down. I was acting as if I would live forever, and as if the universe centered on me and my family. Since then, it's been dawning on me more and more, not how much I need, but how much I don't need. I need the people I love. I need God. I don't need a lot of things. I think I'm ready to center my life more on God, but I'm not sure how to do it. I don't know where to begin. I hope I'm not too late or old to start. Well, I told him he wasn't too old and it wasn't too late. And he might simply start by looking at the real priorities in his life and making sure they're correct. So when we look at this liturgy today, we think about some of the craziness that's going on around us in our world. The church says this is the Sunday of faith. Think about your faith. Think about how each one of us and the church in general needs a renewal in faith, a renewal in spirit, a renewal in truth. And Jesus focuses on three things: a word of encouragement, a word of caution, and a word of challenge. Lord, strengthen our faith.